It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of a big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
So, usually when we talk about, like, you know, a medical diagnosis or just the general unavoidable process of getting older, there is this expectation of precision.
Right, yeah. Like, it's very clinical.
Exactly. It's like engineering or something. You break your arm, you go to the hospital, and the x-ray shows that jagged white line on a black background, and the doctor just points to it and says, you know, there it is, broken.
Right. It's clean.
Yeah. Clean and simple.
Because it's binary. I mean, we like things to be visible. We want them categorized neatly so we can, you know, process them without too much emotional mess.
Right. But then you step into the specific digital universe of the daily broadcasts we monitor, and suddenly that pristine x-ray machine is just, it's completely busted.
Oh, totally.
We're looking at a daily landscape that is messy, unpredictable, and frankly, a bit murky. So today, we are setting the stage for a highly focused exploration of the daily audio logs from the week of August 17th to August 21st, 2026.
Which is such a fascinating window into the reality of one man's life, and by extension, the entire community built around him.
Yeah, it really is. Our mission today is to understand how one retired man living down in South Carolina manages to weave the daily frictions of aging, chaotic local weather and a fierce dedication to grocery store coupons into an absolutely indestructible global community.
It's wild.
It is. So we are looking at Big Fatty. And he has just hit a massive milestone. He turned 70 this week.
70 years old.
Yeah.
And he is still reporting to the microphone every single weekday.
I mean,
laying his life bare for an audience.
Right. And he handles it with this incredible humorous self-reflection. He looks back at his older broadcasts because this archive is deep.
Oh, very deep.
And he points out that he used to be much more, quote, filthy and occasionally, quote, shirtless.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It is a brilliant, highly visual image to start the week, just contrasting the younger shirtless broadcaster with the newly minted septuagenarian.
Yeah. And what stands out immediately is how he measures that passage of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it isn't just a number on a calendar.
Right.
He measures 70 years in the physical artifacts of community affection.
Yeah.
The gifts he unboxes on the air are practically a curated museum exhibit of this community's specific, highly entrenched humor.
The gifts are wildly specific. I mean, first he gets a picture book from the first Wicked movie.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, the lovely standard birthday fare.
They're right? Really normal.
But then he reveals an orange hat featuring a rhinoceros logo.
Okay.
And this isn't just any rhino hat. It is merchandise from a bar in northern Mexico called Woody's.
Wait, northern Mexico?
Yeah, and it was sent over by community members Hot Cub, Besky Bill, and Jay. Think about the logistics of that for a second.
The geographical and inside joke mapping there is just astounding. You have listeners coordinating, presumably acquiring merchandise from a highly specific watering hole in another country just to send it to a retired man in South Carolina. It shows a web of connection that completely transcends casual listening.
Absolutely. But the unboxing doesn't stop there. He also unwraps something called a dignity mug.
A dignity mug.
Yeah, it has two extra large handles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, produced by a company called Granny Joe Products. And this was sent by the Beavers. That's Miss B and her wifey.
Oh, that's sweet, but also hilarious.
It is, but I have to play devil's advocate here because this is where the terminology of the broadcast gets very strange to me. They track these milestones obsessively, but they refuse to use normal language. They strictly refer to birthdays as exiting the birth canal.
Right, which is a deliberate stylistic choice.
But is it a healthy one? Because we get a massive roll call this week using this exact phrasing.
Right.
There's Crooked Hat, who is noted as a Pride 48 co-founder exiting the birth canal. There's Moose P, the generous 2010 number one fan.
Uh-huh.
There's Princess Hana, who Big Fatty claims single-handedly put CVS out of business.
I love that.
And he even celebrates Daniel Bieber and Zach's two-year-old cats, Ian and Barley, noting that because they are two, they are now legally allowed to drink, vote, and drive.
Which makes perfect sense in cat years, I suppose.
I guess so. But I am not convinced this clinical language is a good thing. I mean, doesn't stripping away the sentimental Hallmark card language and replacing it with exiting the birth canal or casually gifting an assistive dignity mug just sound like denial?
Interesting.
Like, are they just refusing to face the music about mortality by hiding behind sterile jokes?
Well, I see why you might think it's a deflection, but I'd actually argue it is the exact opposite of denial.
Really? How so?
Well, think about it. Society demands that aging be handled delicately, you know, usually with hushed tones or overly sentimental platitudes that honestly often make older people feel patronized.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
So by weaponizing clinical terminology, by reducing the miracle of birth to the raw biological mechanics of exiting the birth canal, he is neutralizing the fear of aging.
Hmm. So you're saying the sterile language is a shield?
It's an equalizer. A dignity mug isn't a tragic symbol of lost motor function, right? It's just a funny, practical piece of ceramic from Miss B.
Right.
If you laugh at the extra large handles, they lose their power to make you feel old and frail. The clinical humor acts as a highly effective shock absorber for the very real physical decline they're all navigating together. It's not denial. It's radical confrontation masks as comedy.
Wow. Okay. I can see how that functions as a coping mechanism. You build up an immunity to the fear of your own body breaking down by just staring directly at the mechanics of it.
Exactly.
But that control he exerts over his aging body completely evaporates when he has to deal with the physical world outside.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can neutralize the fear of a dignity mug, but you cannot neutralize a thunderstorm.
The environment this week was entirely hostile, and it really tested that coping mechanism to its limits.
Extremely hostile. So he reports severe local weather hitting the Fatakers villa.
Right.
He refers to them as thunder boomers.
Thunder boomers.
Yeah. And these storms physically knock out the power in three specific bedrooms of the house, which rudely interrupted his afternoon rest.
Which is a tragedy in itself.
Truly. And he strictly refers to this rest on the logs as his nip a nap.
His nip a nap.
Yeah. And then later, the sky just opens up and dumps a literal gallon of rain.
It's just a localized atmospheric assault at that point.
Exactly.
But the chaos wasn't confined to the villa. I mean, the physical world was breaking down everywhere.
Right. The chaos extended to their highly anticipated social event, the hot dog down the hallway weekend over at the Madras and Lynx.
Oh, no.
The entire event was fraught with logistical nightmares, but the primary grievance, the thing that really seemed to sting on the audio log, was the deep disappointment that the hot dogs weren't grilled outside.
Which, honestly, for anyone who takes cookout seriously, that completely changes the flavor profile. A boiled hot dog versus a grilled hot dog is a completely different culinary experience.
Mm-hmm. It's a culinary tragedy. But then the chaos escalates dramatically with a cliffhanger resolution regarding a close community member named Durwood.
Yeah, this was intense.
We find out Durwood completely totaled his car while trying to pass someone outside Charleston.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, the airbags deployed. He's sore, but thankfully he's okay.
A genuinely terrifying real-world accident.
Yeah, but here is where the narrative gets absurd. Durwood survives this traumatic car crash and still manages to make a chaotic arrival at the Capri Lounge, just as the power completely fails due to the storms.
Of course.
Yeah. Because the power is out, the cafe closes early at 9 p.m., forcing the entire group to abruptly pivot to ordering a pizza pie.
I mean, the resilience is impressive.
It is. And amidst all this local chaos, we get medical updates from the broader network. Miss Bacon has torn her ACL.
Ouch.
And blind guy Jay broke his femur while on a cruise.
Oh man, a broken femur on a cruise ship. That is a staggering list of physical and logistical casualties for 1 week.
It really is. But I have to stop you there, because I genuinely struggle with the aesthetic of this broadcast sometimes.
Okay, how do you mean?
Look at the emotional weighting of these events. We are talking about a totaled car with deployed airbags, a broken femur on a cruise ship, a torn ACL, and then the disappointment of ungrilled hot dogs and an interrupted nap.
Yeah, quite the mix.
And the host delivers every single one of these updates with the exact same level of flat, measured gravity. I mean, doesn't this flat delivery just devalue the actual tragedies? It feels like we are flattening everything into a monotonous pancake of minor annoyance.
Mm.
How can a broken femur be reported with the same tone as an ungrilled hot dog?
Well, I mean, it sounds discordant to us, sure, but this raises a crucial point about how we process trauma and inconvenience as we age. I actually don't think it devalues the serious events at all.
You don't?
No. In fact, I think it accurately reflects the cognitive load of a retired individual living alone.
How so? Like, explain that a bit.
Okay, well, when your immediate world is relatively small and highly structured, an ungrilled hot dog or a power outage forcing you to order pizza at 9 p.m. is a major disruption to your emotional baseline.
Right, it throws off the whole routine.
Exactly. The scale is just calibrated differently. So by placing Blind Guy J's broken femur on the exact same narrative tier as a thunder boomer ruining a nip-a-nap, the host isn't saying the femur doesn't matter.
Okay.
He's saying that in the grand tapestry of a Tuesday, we have to survive all of it simultaneously. The flat delivery prevents the community from spiraling into panic.
Oh, so it's about keeping the panic at bay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is a pacing mechanism. If he panicked over Durwood's totaled car, the show would become a tragedy. It would be exhausting to listen to every day.
That makes sense.
Yeah, by keeping the tone flat, it remains a manageable daily log. You acknowledge the broken femur, you acknowledge the ruined hot dogs, and you just keep moving forward.
So when the outside world, you know, the weather, the cars, the bones, when it becomes too chaotic to manage, how do you reassert control? If you can't stop the thunder boomers, what do you do?
Right, you have to pivot.
And the archives show us this incredible retreat into strict economic control and television escapism in the third segment of the week.
Ah, yes, the fortification of the frugal fortress.
The ultimate fortification. We get a legendary grocery receipt reading from his trip to Von's East.
Yes.
And, I mean, he details the exact math for the global audience. He spent exactly $69.46.
Okay.
But he saved an impressive $54.74.
Wow. That is a staggering savings ratio. It requires immense planning to pull that off.
It is a masterclass in couponing. And the specific buy one, get one free items, the BOGOs, they paint such a vivid, almost surreal picture of this domestic reality.
What were they again?
So he lists them off. He's got all free and clear detergent.
Practical.
Coconut cakes, ginger snaps, pretzel crisps, Tootsie Rolls, and sliced prosciutto.
Quite the spread.
Just imagine unpacking those grocery bags. You've got laundry detergent right next to a hedonistic pile of coconut cakes, Tootsie Rolls, and fine Italian cured meat.
Well, those are the essential provisions for survival, right?
Yeah.
Just balancing absolute practicality with sugar and salt.
Yeah. And the economic victories continue with a live on-air Louisiana lottery scratch-off.
Oh, I loved this part.
A listener named Lamont Cranston sent him a $5 Florida Threes ticket. He actually scratches it on the microphone, reveals three threes, and wins $10.
A huge win.
And his immediate reaction is to demand the address of another listener, Phoenix Dave, so he can cash it in for more scratch.
I mean, it is a fully functioning microeconomy operating entirely through the Postal Service. The community is physically mailing each other lottery tickets as a form of currency and entertainment.
It really is. And when he isn't auditing his finances or scratching lottery tickets, he's escaping into media. He details his routine of watching Tom Lamas on the NBC Nightly News.
A classic staple.
He talks about reading a book called Apple Snacks, The First 50 Years, specifically focusing on the Steve Jobs iMac era, which is such a specific era of translucent plastic nostalgia to ground yourself
in. Oh, totally. Very specific vibe.
And he even answers the listener's question by recommending the 1978 dramedy The Paper Chase, specifically comparing its archetypal crotchety professor to community member Dr. Stone.
Which is another inside joke that just strengthens the bonds of the listeners.
Right. But let's look at the psychology of this for a second. Think about how we all handle macro anxieties. Listening to this exhaustive reading of the Von's East receipt, the exact itemization of pretzel crisps and detergent, it feels almost like a digital ASMR grounding exercise.
Oh, definitely.
I have to wonder, is publicly proving that you can save $54 on prosciutto and coconut cakes the ultimate psychological defense mechanism against the macro terror of global inflation?
Honestly, you've hit the nail on the head. Inflation is this invisible macroeconomic monster.
Right.
It makes everyone, especially retirees on a fixed income, feel utterly powerless.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't control the Federal Reserve, you can't control the global supply chain, and you certainly can't control the weather. But you can control the BOGO deals at Von's East.
You can control the coconut cake.
Precisely. Reciting that receipt down to the penny isn't just about saving money. It is a public declaration of competence.
That is a great way to put it.
Right. It is an ASMR grounding exercise. It proves to the host and to his thousands of listeners that his cognitive faculties are sharp and that he is actively winning a game against a chaotic world. It's deeply soothing to listen to someone impose absolute mathematical order on their environment when everything else feels like it's falling apart.
It really takes the anxiety down a notch. You're lulled into this safe, boring mathematical audit of Tootsie Rolls and detergent. You feel completely safe.
Yeah.
And then abruptly, the archives pull you right back into physical, intimate, messy human connection. And it is delivered with an absolute jarring transparency.
The tonal whiplash of this broadcast is something the listener really has to brace for.
It truly is. We move from the solitary safety of the frugal fortress directly into the arrival of what he calls squeaky gentleman callers.
Squeaky gentleman callers.
Yeah, and the audience is warned of this impending intimacy by the sudden jarring drop of the 1960s Milky Date board game jingle.
Which is a completely campy retro audio cue to announce a very modern, very real romantic reality.
Exactly. And the host proudly notes that he has had 4 of these callers in his very first week of being 70.
I mean, that is a very busy social calendar. Good for him.
But it's the unfiltered reality of these encounters that stops you in your tracks. He seamlessly, without a hint of shame, mentions to the audience that he was experiencing rotisserie chicken belches right in the middle of a romantic encounter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he just drops that into the broadcast.
An astounding level of visceral biological honesty. Most people would take that secret to the grave.
I know I would.
And then, without missing a beat, he transitions straight from the love chamber to preparing for real-world hosting. He is getting ready for an event called Friday at Fatty's because his friends Daniel Bieber and Crooked Hat are visiting.
So we have the convergence of the digital community and physical reality.
Right. And the menu for this event is meticulously planned and highly specific.
I'm sure it is. What's on it?
He is preparing a cheese board, and he specifically notes that sending one from Vegas was deemed too expensive by Crooked Hat, so he is handling it locally.
Very practical.
Then the main course is country steak with brown onion gravy, D. Ron's famous mashed potatoes, green beans, more of that Bugo coconut cake, and fresh strawberries.
That sounds amazing. A heavy, comforting, highly structured culinary offering to just ground the social visit.
And while he's prepping this massive meal, he plays a check-in message from a listener named Miserable Lauren, or Law Lauren.
Go Lauren, yeah.
She reports on her travels to Saugatuck and Oregon, and then immediately pivots to complaining about the current economy.
Back to the economy.
Always. She is making salsa with 89-cent cilantro, but is deeply annoyed about having to pay $6.99 for bougie sourdough bread. Mm.
The contrast of the 89-cent cilantro and the $7 bread is the perfect microeconomic grievance.
It is, but I really need you to analyze this dynamic for us because this broadcast aggressively democratizes the human experience.
Okay.
How does putting rotisserie chicken burps, romantic gentleman callers, $7 bougie bread, and a homemade cheese board on the exact same narrative pedestal actually work? Like, doesn't it just sound like a disorganized diary?
Well, I mean, it might sound disorganized to a casual listener, but it is actually the core genius of the entire operation.
Okay, walk me through that.
So traditional media and just society in general categorizes our lives into strict hierarchies.
Right.
Romance is supposed to be elevated, private, and glamorous. Groceries and bodily functions are supposed to be hidden or ignored entirely. Hmm. By refusing to artificially elevate the romantic hookup above the 89-cent cilantro, he completely dismantles that hierarchy.
Hmm. Let me make sure I understand. By making a date and a grocery receipt equally important, he levels the playing field.
He levels it completely.
Yeah.
Think about the rotisserie chicken belch.
I'm trying not to, but okay.
When a bodily function during intimacy is treated with the exact same dry reportage style as a country steak menu or a power outage, shame simply cannot survive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, shame requires secrecy and hierarchy to exist. So by making everything public and everything equal, he gives his community permission to just be messy, biological, bargain-hunting humans. It's radical acceptance disguised as a daily audio log.
Radical acceptance disguised as a daily audio log. That completely reframes how we look at our own mundane routines.
Right.
Which really brings us to the end of our exploration of this specific week in the archives. I want to leave everyone with a thought that goes beyond just understanding this one community. Imagine a historian 100 years from now trying to understand what daily life was actually like in the 2020s. Are they going to look at the polished, high-production evening news broadcasts? Or are they going to learn more about our actual psychological state from a retired man in South Carolina, meticulously documenting the price of bougie sourdough bread, the exact BOGO savings on sliced prosciutto, and the undeniable reality of an aging body? It makes you wonder what parts of our lives are actually worth recording.
Yeah, it's the mundane details that usually tell the truest story.
It really is. Thank you all so much for tuning in and navigating the Thunder Boomers and the Frugal Fortress with us today. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite you to join us right back here for next Sunday's show as we continue to explore the fascinating corners of these archives.
And as a quick reminder, Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights at 8 millimeters in the evening Eastern. which is the only time zone that matters.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat.
Thank you for calling.